The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Good day, everybody. Okay, today we're going to go a little bit different. We're talking about environmental issues, which can be politically and scientifically contentious. There's no doubt about that. I mean, there's so much back and forth, to and fro. But the fact is, Mother Nature, our environment, our ecosystem, she supplies us with life. Yet she also, at a moment's notice, turns the other cheek and gives us destruction and devastation. Like it or not, our environment influences behavior at different levels. The personality makeup of people of a country is shaped by the nature and type of environment in which they live. In natural or cage conditions, animals show behavior starvation and the behavior breaks down. For example, Katrina. My guest today, we will be having a panel, know this firsthand. They witnessed the aftermath of the devastation environmentally, psychologically, after Hurricane Katrina. And they with us today is Global Green USA. And I welcome Mary Lovano, Jeff Supak, and Michelle Pine. And my guests have all had significant experience working in the environmental industry. They each have used their own resources and talents to foster communication and awareness in the environment, sustainability in the future. And hopefully what they bring today will empower you that not just to look at the environment as a political or a scientific contention, but to realize, you know, this is your life you live in and you got to protect it. So I'd like to welcome each one, and they have such outstanding bios, I would take the whole show to give it. So if they each introduce themselves and say a few words, I would love it. So I'll start with you, Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Suzanne. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. I can get so many people just seem like they want to make it an issue, you know, like, you know, go green and not to go green. And it's so much more than that. Can you tell us about your organization and how it started? A little bit about yourself.
Sure, absolutely. So my name is Mary Lovano. I'm the Vice President at Global Green USA. We're an environmental nonprofit organization founded 20 years ago. This is our 20th anniversary. We're the U.S. affiliate of an international organization that was founded by somebody you may have heard of. His name is Mikhail Gorbachev, former world leader. And he approached Diane Meyer-Simon, an activist and philanthropist in the U.S., to help found Global Green 20 years ago. So Diane Meyer-Simon is our founder and still chairwoman emerita of our board. And we have focused on creating a global value shift toward a more sustainable and secure future for the last 20 years.
And then we have Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, how are you?
Hi. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do with Global Green?
Yes, ma'am. I work in the New Orleans office for Global Green. And I've actually have been at Global Green for now about 3 years, and my work has focused on wetlands and water issues that we're facing here in New Orleans. So initially, I began my work focusing on our coast, and since then, I've also been focusing on our urban area and how New Orleans interacts with water on a day-to-day basis.
Wow, I can't wait to get into that. And we have Michelle Pine. How are you doing, Michelle?
Good, thank you.
Hi, well, and what is you, you know, what led you into, how did you get involved with Global Green?
Sure, well, I work with our green building program and specifically manage our Holy Cross project in the Lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans. And that project has five LEED Platinum single-family homes, and also we're building a community development and climate action center currently. So it's busy on site here in New Orleans.
Okay, y'all came in, I think it was 2006, if I'm right, after, you know, Katrina with 2005. What did y'all see? I mean, what was, I mean, you, the devastation and I mean, not just talking about, I mean, well, of course, with the wetlands and the levee breaking and everything, but I mean, also, like, how did it affect the people psychologically? I mean, people that aren't from around this area, until you see it, they don't know. Could any one of y'all, you know, talk to me about it?
I'm happy to take a stab at that, Suzanne. I should mention also I've been with the organization for 17 years, so I was here. I work out of our headquarters in Los Angeles, but I was here when Katrina happened, and Global Green immediately sprung into action. We met, in fact, the day of the storm in our headquarters office and brainstormed about what we could do together as an organization and as individuals, and immediately raised some money from our staff that we used to donate help relief, provide relief for some of the victims of Katrina. But subsequently, we had staff on the ground within 2 weeks after the storm. And I myself was on the ground about 2 months after the storm. And as I'm sure everyone who lives there can attest to, it was like a war zone. I mean, it was as though a war had happened. You know, complete devastation in so many of the neighborhoods around the city.
What, you know, you just gave me chills because I know exactly what you're saying. But to think that, you know, y'all had boots on the ground faster than what our federal government could to, you know, to be able to do. I mean, it was just like a complete breakdown. But yet, a nonprofit organization such as y'all was able to organize and manufacture and get people here faster than our government. I mean, that states a lot for your organization. I'm so proud.
We do pride ourselves on being nimble, and that's one of our core values is nimbleness in the face of disaster, both human and man-made. Are natural and man-made, and it was very important for us to take action quickly. And Jeff and Michelle can certainly speak to the ongoing efforts. You know, a lot of organizations were down on the ground after Katrina, but I believe we're the only national environmental organization that has established a permanent presence with an office and the projects that Michelle and Jeff referenced earlier. And we continue to work across the city to promote sustainable development through buildings, green schools, green affordable housing, the projects that we're building, through our wetlands work, and energy efficiency programs that we've established.
And I think, Jeff, you could talk about this. People not from around here don't understand the value of our wetlands, that not having that barrier. That, I mean, we just susceptible to much more disaster, and the wetlands mean so much for the ecological system, for the animals and everything. Since that's your expertise, can you give us a few insight to that?
Yeah, so the wetlands, how we view them here in New Orleans, and I imagine in many coastal cities actually, is that they're basically like our first line of defense. So they're like the soldiers that take on the storm surge whenever we get these big hurricanes in the Gulf. And so without them, we basically lose protection for our city, and that makes us less resilient. And it opens us up to more disasters that can happen in the future. So our wetlands have a high cost to us, a high value for us to keep them and protect them. But they're under attack by a lot of different issues. Not only are they eroding from storm surge, but they're sinking. So we have subsidence issues here. And there's also sea level rise with climate change, and that's one of Global Green's main focus for the work that we do across the nation, is focused around climate change and mitigating climate change and teaching people even how to adapt to climate change. And when I talk about wetlands, it easily goes right into our urban waters work being another line of defense for us, because as we continue to push water out of New Orleans, it makes us more susceptible to flooding because our city actually begins to sink. We pump water out in New Orleans, and when we pump water out, it doesn't go into the ground like it should, and without recharging our groundwater, our city actually is sinking.
And real fast, we're getting ready to go to break, but when we come back from break, isn't there also an economical issue, because we are a big major port, and is that the GO channel that they want to, you know, move the waterways so that we can keep getting the economy in, and that's also pushing further back our wetlands and our marshes. So, when we come back from break, I want to see if you can answer that question. And Michelle, I want to talk to you about, like, the rebuilding in the Ninth Ward, and like 9 years later, where are we and how are we doing? So thank y'all. We're getting ready to go to break right now, and we'll be back with Global Green USA. Thank you.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier, especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness Presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Jeff Sopak. He's from the New Orleans office of Global Green. And we were just talking about the Mr. Go. For people that don't know Mr. Go in this area and the problems we had with the Mississippi River being one of the largest ports in the United States, and a fight between the wetlands. So I think, Jeff, you were able to articulate more on it for us.
Yeah, so the Mr. Go stands for the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet, and it was actually a man-made waterway for transportation for direct access between the Gulf of Mexico, the river, and the lake, Mississippi River and Lake Pontchartrain, all which New Orleans is surrounded by. And it was a contentious issue because salt water began to intrude from the Gulf of Mexico up the waterway, and it killed many of the cypress trees and the cypress forest in the upper ninth, sorry, in the lower ninth ward near Bayou Bienvenue, and that used to be a healthy wetland, and now no longer. It's just an open body of water, and not having those wetlands there mean that those neighborhoods are more susceptible to storm surge, sea level rise, storm surge issues.
Who authorizes? I mean, you know, I mean, who declares what waterway, the path? You know, I mean, that's nature, and they divert it. Who has the authority to divert it?
To create the new waterway?
Yeah.
The authority, you know, I'm not exactly sure who the authority was involved into the project, but it was for transportation issues. So I'm imagining there were many authorities involved when we're talking about large transportation or transportation of large ships.
Right. Commercial money, big business, and not looking after, you know, what's indigenous to what makes us, you know, unique down here. And Michelle, you said you've been working with the rebuilding of the Ninth Ward, which maybe a lot of people don't know what the Ninth Ward is, but you saw it on TV. Anybody that's listening, that's one that they said that looked like was, you know, a war zone. And so we 9 years after, we just recently passed the anniversary of Katrina. And what have you been able to do so far? What accomplishments or what goals do you still see, you know, envision for getting it back on its feet?
Absolutely. Well, Global Green actually, like Mary said, was on the ground very soon after the storm. And one of the projects they created was called the Holy Cross Project. And it began as a sustainable design competition where architects and designers from around the world submitted designs to basically build a sustainable village within the Lower Ninth Ward. And this was a catalytic project. So really it was teaching designers, developers, contractors, builders in New Orleans, how we can build back better and more resiliently. So we're building buildings that are prepared for future storms, that will resist flooding, and that are built with resiliency techniques. And so we've completed 5 single-family LEED Platinum homes, and they are currently occupied, and we are under construction for Community Development and Climate Action Center.
Wow.
So, as you said, it's been 9 years since the storm, but the Lower Ninth Ward is still lacking some of the resources, like a grocery store, so fresh food access, pharmacy, and banking locations. And so we're still coming back, and Global Green hopes to offer some of those resources to the community with our Community Development and Climate Action Center.
Well, I sure hope from everybody listening that this, you know, story, that they really see that, I mean, it's not about, you know, fighting for this and that, that y'all really been, after 9 years, no grocery, no pharmacy. Where's everybody else? Do you partner with, like, Habitat for Humanity or something like that? Are y'all doing this all on your own?
Well, we've developed relationships in New Orleans and of course, across the country through green urbanism work. Here in New Orleans, it's a very small nonprofit community that all you know, works together to bring families home and to just do good for New Orleans. And so we have not formalized partnerships, but certainly we work with other building organizations and are definitely a resource for them to include green building techniques in their homes as they rebuild.
So what I understand that you have a campaign fundraising for Holy Cross community project? Is that locally or nationally, or how can people out there listening that want to help, you know, to, you know, revive and to see these people that have been just totally devastated, how can they find out and go to you?
Sure.
Suzanne, I can take that question.
Okay, Mary, thank you.
We certainly are fundraising. We still have a ways to go in terms of our fundraising for the completion of the Community Development and Climate Action Center. And we have a number of different ways people can contribute to that. They can either donate online on our website. They can call us directly at 310-581-2700 at our headquarters in Los Angeles. They can participate through some of our events. We have fundraising events throughout the year in several different cities. We have, some of our donors just write checks to us directly. And again, the website at globalgreen.org has all of the information that anyone might need to make a donation directly to the organization.
Oh, thank you, Mary. We're getting ready to go to break, but when I come back, I'd just like to ask you some questions like you see in the future for sustainability and what's in the future for us. I mean, it seems bleak on certain, you know, areas in the world and what's out there. So we're going to be coming back with my great panel from Global Green USA. We'll be back.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they move forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall-Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, coming back from break, I found out we have a caller on hold that wants to ask my panel something. So, I don't know where Robin is from, but Robin wishes to ask my gracious panel a question. Robin, are you there?
Yes, this is Robin, but I was actually going to be your guest. I'm from Eden Keeper.
Oh, yeah, you're on the second half?
So I'll just wait on hold.
Okay. That's great. You're on my second segment. We were doing a group panel. Okay, no problem. So you'll be on shortly, and I can't wait to have Robin Puccio on. And she's with eatingkeepers.org, so we'll be having you shortly. Thank you, Robin. I'm sorry. Okay. That's why they didn't give me the city or town. So going back to what we were discussing, how large is your organization? You mentioned that. I don't want people to think that it's just local for New Orleans, and you mentioned that you dispense relief to Hurricane Sandy in New York City, and I was just wondering, do you do besides hurricanes like the BP oil spill or the San Francisco, the one in the Napa Valley? I mean, how large is your organization? I mean,
Our organization includes four offices and then one person in San Francisco, about 40 staff in total. We do work like we've done in New Orleans and other places, as I mentioned, in the New York region post-Hurricane Sandy. But to answer your question about other kinds of disasters, there was a man-made disaster in the Bay Area of California a few years ago where a natural gas pipeline exploded and 38 homes were destroyed. Eight people were killed, unfortunately, but the community there rebuilt, and we ended up helping them rebuild green, including making sure that a number of families got solar panels on their new homes as a result of a donation from the SunPower Corporation. We also helped build the first LEED Platinum home in that community. So even though it was not a natural disaster, when those kinds of opportunities occur, we reach out to help and then provide our expertise and, try to rebuild as green as possible, as well as encouraging future buildings and projects to
okay, you mentioned LEED. Okay, I mean, a lot of people like myself, I have no clue what you mean by LEED.
Sorry, we use that acronym a lot. LEED is the acronym for a green building rating system developed by the U.S. Green Building Council, and it's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design.
Okay, wow.
Essentially, the LEED rating system is used to denote a building's greenness based on a variety of characteristics.
Now, are y'all under the auspices like the UN Sustainability Project?
No, we were founded as an organization sort of based on the UN model with affiliates in over 30 countries. But we don't, and we certainly, you know, we were founded after Kyoto, the Kyoto Climate Summit. So we are certainly following the principles established there, but we're not beholden specifically to the UN principles.
If I could get a little personal, I'd just like to know my guests better. If each one of you could tell me, like, what got you interested? How did you, you know, get to the point where you are today? I mean, you know, what propelled you to say, this is what I'm going to do? If you want to start off first, Mary.
Sure. I cut my teeth in politics. I studied that and then worked on Capitol Hill, and about midway through my career there, I took a vacation to Oregon and saw my first clear cut where an entire forest had been chopped down and all that was left were stumps. And I had always been an outdoors person, but that was what turned me into an environmentalist. And I came back to Washington with, you know, the desire to work more intently on environmental issues and you know, jumping forward another 4 years later, I started at Global Green when we were 2 years old.
Wow. That's something. And Jeff, how did you get started?
Well, so actually, I grew up in Texas on the coast, and my parents farm rice in Texas. And we've kind of seen the effects of climate change happening on our farm. We've seen, you know, our weather getting drier, and then just how much rice is so water intensive. I've played in the water my whole life, from farming rice to fishing on the coast, and kind of got the love for the water in that way. We saw the effects of climate change, and I just kind of became passionate about it. And it was Hurricane Katrina that actually opened my eyes to environmental issues.
Really?
In general, watching it on the news right before it hit, I was in Texas. I kind of knew, I had a bad feeling about it. And then just seeing how the people were treated throughout the process, it really got me, interested in environmental justice issues. And, that we all deserve a clean and healthy environment that's safe as well. And I think safety is a big part of why, I came to Global Green. It was founded, around the idea of nuclear disarmament of weapons, but then added on there was the security threat of climate change and how climate change will make us a less safe.
Mother Nature takes care of us, but if we don't take care of her, she's not going to take care of us anymore. And Michelle, how was your adventure into this unique, climate environmentalist issue?
Well, I came through kind of community development and activism kind of lens. I served in AmeriCorps National Community Civilian Corps, and that is a national service program in which I worked in a lot of different communities in the southern region. And so I worked with a different nonprofit every 2 months for 2 years and really took a deep dive into the communities down here. And one of kind of the rules that we lived by was not telling a neighborhood or a community what they needed to do, but they actually applied for our assistance, told us what they needed, they wanted help with. And so I think that really attracted me to Global Green, with the Holy Cross Project and other projects that Global Green has been involved in. They really have taken the community in with the project. And so that's made a huge effect on where the project goes. And they offer just the technical expertise to get done what the community already wants. So I think that's a really large part of what attracted me to Global Green.
Wow. And I mean, each of y'all have such unique backgrounds coming into it. But there's so much, argument, contention, and I don't think a lot of people see how being environmentally aware, which I said, environmental psychology, I mean, where you live, if you're in a small space, in criminal justice, we call it the broken windows theory, that you live in a neighborhood with, crack houses and abandoned houses. It replicates, in the mind, the brain structure. It's epigenetics too, that it just happens. And what is your feelings when people say those crazy environmentalists, and how do you get your point across? This is what I need to know, that let people know that it can be empowering. It doesn't have to be this way or that way, but to see that, we need sustainability, clear cut. With the corporate, the restrictions with government and stuff like that, there's a constant war with the environment. And if you had any suggestions, I'd love to be able to tell my audience.
I'm not sure who that was directed at, and I'm happy to take a stab at it. The bottom line is that the environment really isn't a political issue. It's a human issue. And as we look at our changing environment every day, we are looking at more extreme weather events. We're looking at sea level rises. We're looking at, the erosion of our natural buffers like the wetlands that Jeff was describing. And it doesn't take a politician or even someone, who's an expert to realize that those changes are having an impact on everybody and everyone's lives and livelihoods. And I, sort of preach environmentalism by not preaching it at all, but just by doing it in my daily life and setting an example, and hoping that the people that know me will, follow because they think it's the right thing to do. But I think, polarizing people and turning it into a political issue is the exact wrong way to get people's attention. And I mean, not to say that politics isn't important, because it's certainly an integral tool to our being able to advance the sustainability principles that we do as an organization. But it's a personal decision and choice. And one of the things that we've, as an organization, focused on is empowering citizens. In fact, we had a contest called our Citizen Entrepreneur Contest that challenged citizens all across the U.S. to step up. And what we said is, green a corner. Tell us how you're going to green a corner of your own world.
Oh.
And we had a prize. It was a small cash prize that we awarded to a number of different people across the country, all ages, you know, all backgrounds, because they were doing something in their own community. And that's the way we like to inspire others.
Oh, I think it concerns a lot of people. Like, if you go look at your city plan, a lot of city plan, I think, now help me with this, I'm trying to remember, and it's come from the UN. Is it UN 21, where they want pretty much to, you know, have control over the design of your house, what bikeways, parkways, or whatever, where it's more of a control issue. And I think that's where a lot of people are getting, you know, like it's more like a control issue and not what y'all are really out there trying to say. You know, we try to say that, you know, the rainforest, I mean, look what's happening. I mean, it's how many, you know, different new medications or discoveries could be out there, but if man keeps on, you know, whacking away at our, what God's given us to sustain us, something's, you know, going to give, and then just making designs on urban living. I don't know, but and that's why I'm so glad that y'all are able to, you know, enlighten other people. And it's just like you said, it shouldn't be a political issue, but, you know, it seems like to always be thrown in there, like, you know, this way or that way. Like, I mean, Greenpeace, I mean, how bad did, you know, Greenpeace get a bad name? And all they were trying to do, correct me if I'm wrong, was just save the environment. But I appreciate that. If you could give me, each one of y'all, three tips on, you know, sustainability, like, what would you say for, you know, an average person to do besides donate to your organization?
I can start off with that. So, you know, being that I work in the water world, you know, I think water, you can pull up a drought monitor map of the United States, and you'll see a lot of the nation is under a drought. And even though that's the opposite of what we usually face here in New Orleans, it's very important to conserve water. So, you know, installing simple things in your home like aerators on your sinks or on your faucets, which are really cheap and inexpensive, can save water, and it can also save on your water bill. And there's such things as low flow shower heads and dual flush toilets are all little ways that you can conserve water. And then my second tip is to then have a rain barrel on the side of your home, because then you can catch whatever rainwater you do get, and you can water your garden. And then my third tip is to always plant native species in your yard, because native species, of course, know how to handle the environment that they're planted in. And they're just as beautiful as, I feel like, planting any other types of plants.
Okay, Jeff, I have to throw this back at you. I mean, I know I'm not going on a political rampage, but what do you think about in California with that smeltfish, that they've taken all the natural water resources for people for this little bitty fish? I mean, is that, would you say that's ecologically sound, or like extremism?
You know, I think it's different every situation. I mean, I grew up in Texas where water is being fought over every day. And it just kind of shows us how these are the issues that we're going to be facing in the future with, you know, climate change threatening our security and the issues that we're really going to have to face. So do I agree with it or not? It's not really you know, I don't have a very clear cut opinion about it. It's more about, we're going to have to try a lot of different innovative ways to manage our water, conserve our water. And that's just the summary of the story. So whatever they're trying now, it may or may not work in the long term. But these are the conversations that we really have to have as a community. And that's where the work that Global Green has done is, you know, we always want to bring a message to the community and allow the community to be a part of the discussion and to kind of get their, wrap their heads around it and, you know, really say, I don't really like this idea and this is why I don't like it. And we take note of that and, you know, continue the discussion with, you know, understanding what the community wants and needs are and their understanding is.
Right. And Michelle, I didn't forget you. What are your three? Oh, we have 1 minute left if you could throw it in.
Sure. Well, I focus mostly on energy efficiency with my tips with the Holy Cross Project. So three really easy ones your listeners can do today is the first one would be change your light bulbs, your incandescent light bulbs, to compact fluorescents or LED light bulbs, which you can find at really any hardware store. And those will save you at least 75% of the energy used, and they often last up to 10 times longer. The second one would be to change your computer to sleep after a short period of inactivity. So no more screen savers that nobody's watching and wasting the energy on that. You can just have it turn to sleep mode when you're not using it. And then also unplugging any of those appliances you're not using, like toasters or coffee machines, blenders, and other appliances, because they do suck a small amount of energy through there when even when they're not in use. And so those are kind of some easy ways you can lower your energy bill and then also your carbon footprint.
Oh, I love having y'all with Global Green USA. And, I mean, your words of empowerment, and I think it shed new light on not just, you know, like the preconception of what environmental energy, you know. So I like to thank you all again, Mary Lovano, Jeff Sopak, and Michelle Pine. Thank you so much for being my guest. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure.
Okay. Yeah. Now, go to their website. And what's the website, Michelle?
It's globalgreen.org.
Okay. And be sure to donate. I mean, it's for excellent cause for your grandchildren, your future grandchildren, and for us right now. So thank you. And thank you for being my guest. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The stress of home life, work life, and personal life converge on us on practically a daily basis. Yet, so rarely do we let others see our real selves. And we carry on like we don't have a single problem. We need to connect and to find out we're not alone. Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadek to find out not only what's been created, but the story behind it. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Master your reality and manifest your desires effortlessly. Listen to The Trivedi Effect to find out how raising your level of consciousness can totally transform every aspect of your life. Hosted by Mahendra Kumar Trivedi. With Trivedi Master Alice Branton, our program will spotlight the nearly 4,000 documented scientific studies that have proven the transformational impact of this energy extends beyond humans to all living and even non-living matter. Tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel or Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, I hope everybody enjoyed the first segment with my panel, but I have somebody special for my second section, and her name is Robin Prechia, and she's the editor-in-chief of EdenKeepers.org, which is an online news and resource site that explores the relationship between, get this, religion and spirituality and environmentalism, okay? Not too many people realize that there's a concept with that, which there is. I mean, like the Hindus, the Buddhists and all like that, they don't kill everything, and everything's is idolized. And so with Robin, I like to introduce her right now. She's with EdenKeepers.org. And Robin, I'm going to leave it to you so you can give us a little bit more in-depth.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure.
So as you said, EdenKeeper.org explores the relationship between religion / spirituality and environmentalism. And in, you know, a lot of religions, you talked about Buddhism and Hinduism, but also Christianity, Judaism, Islam, they all have an environmental component from what I found. And so what we do on Eden Keeper is we highlight a lot of the great work that, you know, all these interfaith religions are doing for the environment, whether that's coming out in support for the EPA's new carbon pollution rules, which a lot of religious organizations have come out in support of that, or we're seeing this growing movement now with religious organizations divesting, so choosing not to invest in fossil fuel companies and actually pulling out their endowments from that. And, you know, just like little things, putting solar panels on the church roofs or putting in a community garden. So we like to write stories about that, but then we're also not afraid to call out, you know, some organizations who, you know, want to further their political agenda by, you know, kind of equating it to, you know, to saying that the environment isn't a religious belief.
Now, let me ask you this. This is off the cuff and besides the religious thing, but it seems like you hear talk, I think it's HARP, H-A-R-P, you know, where the government, they try to use a saying anyway, that being able to manufacture environmental disasters as a warfare tactic. And I think I read something about you comparing, you know, climate change as used to, you know, like further gender, like the Nazis, you know, as compared to, you know, propagating what they thought was like what was correct in the best interests of the global community. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but...
Yeah, I think there's been... you know, you hear a lot of people saying that there's a lot of environmental alarmism. And, you know, and I have to admit there is, you know, a little bit. But I think that what we try to do at Eden Keeper is really show that, you know, you don't have to necessarily buy into, buying into all of that alarmism. So it's not about, like, when it comes to climate change, that the Earth is going to warm up by a specific amount of degrees, or that, you know, the ocean levels are going to rise by a certain amount, but that, you know, we have this moral duty not to consume as much as we are, and not to... you know, find different ways of finding energy sources. So it's not just oil going into your car. So it's not about the political and economic issues that I think kind of get people worked up in the environmental sphere. But it's about the moral duties to be better to the environment.
But isn't that what we're supposed to be, God, or whatever your higher energy force is? That's He's given us the planet Earth, and it's our duty to be the protector and to make it flourish, not to diminish, you know, what's been given to us.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's the environmental stewardship aspect, that we have a duty to protect God's creation. And, you know, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism all share that belief. But then, you know, you get some people who believe that, God would never do anything bad to us, so we don't really need to worry about the environment that much, or we can take from the environment everything that we want because it was put here for us. And I think that's when you start using, that's when you kind of miss the moral duty to kind of take care of the environment.
And you know, it's so interesting. I'm not really knowledgeable about everything, but it still says in the Bible, the book of Revelations, that what happens at the end, it's going to be massive destruction from Earth, from tidal waves to locusts to everything like that. So there's got to be some kind of moral and spiritual context. I mean, here it says it, and those who don't believe in the Bible, whatever, but I mean, it's still written a book how many years ago? So, I mean, it makes you wonder. I mean, he didn't say, like, you know, a nuclear bomb was going to be dropped upon us, but, you know, at the end of the world, what is it, the book of Revelation say, you know, it's the apocalyptic, the seven signs, I think it is, and most of it is having to do with the environment, you know, closing in on mankind for what we did to it or how we lived our life. But and that's why I find it so your message so enlightening, because a lot of people don't equate, you know, spirituality, like I said, unless you're raised in certain religions, that, you know, that you have to, not have to, that it's like a respect, it's a dignity that, you know, you appreciate nature, the birds singing and different things, you know, like that. And I mean, it seems like also I heard there's Christian groups in opposition to the climate change, such as the Llamas versus climate change as a serious concern. I mean, but how can they disequate, you know, God's gift, like I was saying earlier in my opening, that, you know, Mother Nature gives, but she can take away in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And so how can you disengage, you know, spirituality from Mother Earth?
I think that's kind of the thing, is that you have to view our relationship with the Earth and kind of where we are now with it as a gift. And that, yes, you know, Mother Nature can take this away at any time. There can be a terrible storm like Katrina and, you know, bad things happen. But, you know, just appreciate what you have right now. And so, yeah, I think it's a challenge to not, live in fear when it comes to the environment. But also, you know, embrace it on a day-to-day basis and, develop a kind of a love for it and want to protect it and a joy in it and a joy in the future.
Well, Robin, within the next 10 seconds, give me some indication, like what can you tell somebody to empower their life by using eating?
Well, I would say that people need to get outside. They need to find out what inspires them about nature. And they need to take that spirituality outside, maybe meditate in nature or, you know, pray in nature, but develop a relationship with the world around you, and you'll feel a sense of empowerment that way.
Well, thank you, Robin Pritchier. I thank all my guests today, and I hope go outside, pick a flower, smell it, enjoy the universe. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being my guest.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.